Chump, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Good afternoon. A sunny, beautiful day in Edmonton, and we are Nation Radio. You can email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. You can also follow Nation Radio on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Over 200 followers, making us the 975th most followed show at the team, right after the Pipeline Show. But they have a very small lead. We're hoping to catch up later on today. Our guests this afternoon include Brian Sutherby. He'll be by talking about injuries during the playoffs and how players often evade telling us exactly what's going on. Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun will discuss the slow-moving Thrasher sale to Winnipeg interests. I wonder, I'm going to ask him, the question I want to know the answer to is, are there people in Winnipeg right now going, oh, this doesn't look good? Because I can tell you, as a fan of the Oilers, I was always waiting, especially before the EIG came along, for that, you know, that fateful newspaper or radio broadcast where they talked about, you know, moving to Houston or whatever, or things have changed. And I think Winnipeg probably is feeling a little bit of that right now. So we'll talk about that. Craig Button returns for another edition of Nation Radio Talk. This time he'll take us through the process of coming up with the list for each NHL team. Craig, great background for that kind of conversation, was a head scout, obviously scouted a lot, and a general manager as well. And we'll talk Memorial Cup too. Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun will visit us to tell us how the Left Coast and Vancouver and their humble fans are dealing with a Stanley Cup final. We'll also talk to Mario Duhamel, coach of the Drummondville Voltigeurs, give a close-up view of Sean Couturier and the kind of player some NHL team will acquire. He looks like a really good player. And Michael Spadel, Speeds from the Oilogosphere, will drop by to give us his impressions of this year's draft. He's an outstanding handicapper of each season's NHL draft. I've been following him for years, and he really does have some very interesting insights. So we'll look forward to that. Couple afternoon, lots to talk about today, including it's Boston. The Bruins should be a worthy opponent for the Vancouver Canucks in the final, and the teams do have some connections dating back all the way to Gary Doak in the expansion draft in 1970. Also, the Cam Neely trade should get a lot of play in the lead up to the series, and there'll be plenty of time for us to talk about the matchups. My own opinion is that going into the series, Vancouver should be the favorite, but not by as much as many believe. It'll likely be a long series. Boston needs huge performances down the middle from Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, and the rest. Guys like Chris Kelly, Brad Marchand will be vital, and Dennis Seidenberg, who played very well in the semifinals, needs to play at that current level for the next couple of weeks. I think it's possible for the Bruins to win, but don't think they'll enter the playoffs as a favorite. I haven't looked at the line yet, but Vancouver, man, they are an outstanding team. The Bruins have lost their last five Stanley Cups in a row after the two Orr Stanleys in 70 and 72. Part of the damage of those five losses came from our own Oilers in 88 and 90. The rest were the Habs twice and that Philadelphia Flyers victory. It was aided by a phantom call on Bobby Orr with about 3 minutes left, and I do not forgive that. So it's Boston and Vancouver beginning on Wednesday, and I think that long break probably benefits Boston. It might be too long for Vancouver. They're going to have been off for an entire week. At the Memorial Cup, St. John is a strong favorite to win the Mum Cup tomorrow night. St. Mike's looked good last night in their victory over Kootenay, but there isn't much evidence that any of the three competing teams can match the Sea Dogs' explosive offense. It's been St. John's championship to win all week, and the chances of an old-fashioned beatdown are certainly there. Doug Weight retired this week. He announced his... What a classy guy. He had very kind things to say about the Oilers organization and Glenn Sather and Kevin Lowe specifically. Always been a favorite for Oilers Nation. So this week gave us a chance to look back and remember those terrific seasons with Waite, Smith, Joseph, and the rest. I don't know that the 95 through about 2001 Oilers will be long remembered in the great history of Edmonton's Oilers, but they didn't win a pennant or a Stanley Cup, but they did have some amazing hockey players and some good runs there. You remember against Dallas and Colorado, and fondly remembered Doug Weight. Brian Rafalski also announced his retirement from the game this week. Interesting story, a class guy and a very good hockey player. A little nervous for me, though, because it means Detroit has $6 million to spend on somebody, and they always spend their free agent money wisely, so that's going to be something to follow as the summer rolls along. On the 28th of February, the trade deadline, the LA Kings gave up a first and third round pick plus Colton Tuber to Edmonton for Dustin Penner. and they wanted him to help down the stretch and into the playoffs. He had 2 goals and 4 assists in 19 regular season games after a good start, and then 1 goal and an assist in 6 playoff games. And Kings GM Dean Lombardi went off a little bit in an email to Sporting News this week. I don't know if you heard it or not, but he said, and I quote, "Dustin is at the crossroads of his career. He can choose to use his athletic ability to either become a dominant power forward in the NHL or be a dominant number four hitter in the El Cid Lounge in a men's softball league. The choice is his." I mean, that's funny if it is from the actual Dean Lombardi, but I'll say this. Panner would never have been traded by Edmonton, in my opinion, but Steve Tambellini wanted to get into the first round again with the number one overall pick and then something between 15 and 30. It was an asset he didn't have a year ago when he was looking to add a defenseman like Cam Fowler, who dropped. And remember the oil change episode with Stu McGregor talking about selecting Martin Marinson at number 31 and then hoping Tyler Pitlick, who they had higher on their board, would be available later? They ended up taking a chance that Marinson would be available and then traded Riley Nash to snare Marinson at, I think, 46. I think that's the reason that Penner got traded at the deadline. The Oilers have probably identified a target group of defensemen and may attempt to trade up from number 19 in order to take maybe Doug Hamilton or someone in that range. I think the Oilers might trade up into the top 8. I talked about that on Oilers Nation as well this week, and there's a very good chance, I think, that the Edmonton Oilers will make 2 picks at least in the top 15 or so at the draft this summer. 7 minutes after 12, and we invite our first guest to join us, Brian Sutherby. Brian, how are you this afternoon?
Oh.
How are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Very, very well. Are you following the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, I catch them when I can. I can't say when we're not playing that I'm as interested as I would be, but obviously I'm a hockey fan and can't miss games like last night or the important ones for sure.
Yeah. Well, I was watching last night and then at the end of the San Jose-Vancouver series, and a question came to mind I wanted to ask you. We saw Ryan Clough and Joe Thornton, and last night there were a couple of examples on the Bruins side, Nathan Horton specifically, where these big guys, you know, they're injured or they're clearly favoring something, and they don't really come clean when they're talking to the media about the injury. Number one, I think we know why that is. They don't want to make it more severe. Number two, how difficult is it for these guys to even think about taking themselves out of the lineup during a Stanley Cup playoffs?
It's tough. I mean, as a player, all you want to do is play. And especially at playoff time, I mean, you see Manny Malhotra doing everything he can to get back in, and it's just so important. You don't want to give up that opportunity to have a chance at a Stanley Cup, because you never know when you're going to get it again. And for those guys, I mean, it's just such a battle. The things that they're dealing with right now are probably insane once they come out after the playoffs. And but it's tough. I mean, they're doing anything they can to get rest and get healthy for that next game, and it's certainly not fun. I can probably say that practices or time away from the rink is probably the time they're most sore once you get into the game and game time rolls around, the adrenaline starts going and it settles down a little bit.
So for somebody like Nathan Horton last night, who was injured in the first period and then came back to score the only goal of the game, there's no real chance the trainer's going to talk him out of going back out there. He's just trying to make him as comfortable as possible when he does get back on the ice.
Yeah, well, at that point, the trainer is not usually, trying to talk you out of it either. I don't think they want to win as bad as anyone else. And but at that point, there's not too many guys in that league that are going to be trying to talk themselves out or not going on the ice. And likely he left the game to go get bandaged up or wrapped or possibly maybe even injected and try to numb the area and get through it as best he can. And obviously he did, scored a big goal and. Probably a little more sore this morning, but he's got a few days to get some rest.
How painful is it, and I'm asking you to speak on behalf of Joe Thornton and Ryan Clough, so that's probably not fair, but how painful is it for a player like, say, Ryan Clough, who had such a great, strong beginning to the playoff, to go out there and not really be able to play at the greatest level of his own ability because of injury at a very important time in the season?
Yeah, I mean that's obviously given the stakes and the playoffs, it's huge. I mean, that's difficult at any time. I mean, obviously on that stage and what you're dealing with and what you're fighting for, it's certainly more important and the ultimate goal is to win. But anytime you're you're not able to perform or you're not able to compete to the level that you want to. There's always people watching you. There's always people judging you. There's always people questioning, you know, why you're not playing well or what you're dealing with. And a lot of times people don't even know. So incredibly frustrating. I've obviously been through it. You know, haven't been through it at the conference final level, and I'm sure incredibly difficult to not be able to perform or you know, be as healthy as he would have liked.
From the Vancouver Canucks standpoint, they've been sitting back for a few days and waiting for their you know, to find out who their opposition is. So I have two questions there. Is it possible to have too long a layoff at this point in the season? And then secondly, would the Canucks players care at all who came out of the East?
First question, you know, there definitely are times where you've been off too long and teams can come in and get a jump on you. And if you've had a little too long of a layoff, I think with it not starting till Wednesday, both teams are going to be well rested and both teams won't have played for a while. So, you know, probably the rest at that point is beneficial. Had it maybe started Sunday or something like that, you know, maybe a chance for that. But I think given the rest and time, everyone's begging for that, and it's probably going to be great for both teams. As for Vancouver and hoping, probably a little more in the coaching office. You know, maybe they're studying film or things that maybe they would feel they're better suited to play one another. But when you're playing against East and West and how few times you see teams these days, you know, as players, you don't really get a feel or you don't really, know what that team's all about. Obviously Boston's a little bigger in size and you know, they're a strong team, and Tampa was very fast and you know, so both teams would sort of play different styles, and I'm sure Vancouver coaches have it in their mind what they would have liked to have done, but the players, they're just going to go out and play.
Sounds good. We're with Brian Sutherby. This is Nation Radio. Our week in the email is at nationradio@team1260.com, and follow us on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Brian, we talked a little last time about the combine and your experience. I'd like to dig a little deeper. During the interview process, did you feel there were specific teams that had a high interest in you, or were they the same questions and it felt like very routine by the time you were midway through?
At the combine, it was pretty routine. I mean, there wasn't a lot of different questions. I remember meeting with about 20 or 22 teams, because at the time I was slated to go pretty much anywhere from after maybe pick 15 to middle of the second round. So I had a lot of interviews and a lot of work to do that day. But you know, as for teams that I felt were maybe a little more interested at the time, I couldn't say that coming out of the meetings. I didn't really know one way or another. As we got closer to the draft, I met with a few teams again, and even a couple again after that. So that's sort of where I got a little more of a feeling there.
During that entire process, were there any questions that just struck you as like bat bleep crazy?
most of the questions were pretty standard, you know, family and hockey questions and your upbringing and things like that. I can't really recall anything particular. I remember meeting with Washington and they seemed to be sort of the most laid back. I remember they asked me to tell a joke when I first got in there, and I don't remember what I said, but it was likely something terrible. But we laughed a lot more than maybe some of the other interviews, and that was nice. I remember meeting with San Jose. That was probably the most uncomfortable one. I don't remember the scout's name, but he sort of really tried to put you on the spot and ask you some difficult questions. And then I remember they made me get up and take my suit off and do 30-second jumps over this little beam, just stripped down into my boxers. So I don't know, some little agility test, and probably a test just to try to make you uncomfortable and see how you're going to handle it. And I know talking to most players at that San Jose interview is probably the weirdest and most uncomfortable of the bunch.
It sounds like maybe the Sharks were overthinking the draft process at that time.
Possibly.
How much did you know about like preparation, conditioning, nutrition at that point in time when you got into professional hockey, or at least had been drafted? Were you well up on the latest information, or were you just a kid who had, you know, God-given talent and got that far just doing it that way?
No, I kind of, you know, like I said when we talked a couple weeks ago, I once I played my first year in the Western League, that was the first year that, you know, I was kind of, okay, this is actually real, and maybe it's time to buckle down here. Before that, it was kind of just enjoying the game and the life and playing it for fun. And then after that first year in the Western League, I started with a trainer, and he'd been through the process. Trained guys that had done the combine and gone on to be drafted and play in the NHL, and so working with him at that point I'd been doing it for 2 years before the draft, so I was pretty used to it. There definitely are kids that it's very foreign to them at that point, but I was fortunate enough to start it a little sooner than some.
Now you're sitting on draft day and you're waiting to be picked, and you said a few minutes ago about anywhere from 15 to the middle of the second round. So you were drafted late first round. Tell me about your experience. Was there some apprehension, or were you cool no matter what happened?
At that point, I mean, all season and kind of before that, I was pretty happy-go-lucky and surprised to even be ranked where I was. So I was certainly happy and grateful that I was cast into that sort of crew as far as being a possible first rounder. And come draft day, I certainly wanted to go in the first round. I didn't care where, or didn't care to who, or how late, but I definitely wanted to stay in the top 30. That was a goal of mine for sure. And there were some nervous times there. I didn't know whereabouts I might go. I remember I'd met with Chicago. I'd actually met with Chicago the most, three times, maybe even four. And they were picking, I think, 10th and 11th that year, and that seemed a little high. But they'd also interview me so much that I was kind of thinking, okay, like maybe I'm going to go here. And so right around pick 10, I was sort of getting anxious and sat there until 26. And at 26, I had a pretty good feeling. I'd met with Washington a couple times, and I had a pretty good relationship with some of their scouts just through the meetings, and they were asking me what teams were interested and if they thought they would have a shot at, or if I thought they would have a shot at me. And those are kind of things that led me to believe that they may come after me, and they did, and it was very cool.
Absolutely. Washington drafted you out of the WHL, and they drafted heavily in the WHL during that era. They took Matt Pettinger in round two. Did you know Matt well, and did that make it easier to go to the rookie camp and to enter into the Washington organization?
I knew him just a little bit, through the whole drafting process and the combine and going to certain teams or going to, teams fly you places and they bring a bunch of kids. You kind of meet some guys through the whole process, but as far as any time before that, I didn't know Petty. But anytime you have a little friend or someone that it's a good feeling. It was cool. You go to the summer camps once you get drafted and meet all the new faces and all the young kids, and you're around guys your age, so that sort of eases it for sure.
Did that help you? Did that summer camp make it easier for you to go to training camp and then obviously ease your way into the NHL?
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice going there to get your feet wet. It's it's a big step going from living at home to junior and billets, and then next thing you know, at 17, 18, you're thrust into flying across the country and staying in a place by yourself for 2 weeks and living in a hotel, and they give you money, and you got to fend for yourself and learn how to cook your own meals or spend your money while you're per diem wisely on food and make sure you don't spend it all. So it's an adjustment. They kind of walk you through all the workouts and things they want to see and some on-ice stuff. But again, you're doing it with kids that are your age. And it was a nice little stepping stone going into camp.
I'm pushing 50 and I'm still working on that preparing your own meal stuff. So don't feel.
Me too.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We're going to have you back again. You have a great day.
Right on. Thanks for having me. Take care.
That's Brian Sutherby, and you know what? Boy, insightful guy, offering some really good information on the draft process. Also, at the early part of the interview, we talked about those big power forwards and how difficult it is to get through a Stanley Cup playoffs, even a series, and healthy and how much it impacts them. So that was fun. I enjoyed that very much. On the way, we're going to talk to Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Our email is nationradio at theteam1260.com, and you can join us on Twitter as well at It's Nation Radio. And joined by Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun this afternoon. Ted, are you on Twitter as well?
Yes, I am.
What's your hash?
At Ted. It's underscore Wyman. Ted underscore Wyman.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. I can tell you honestly that the people I talk to in Edmonton who are Oiler fans are more excited about the Jets coming than the Canucks winning the Stanley Cup. So what's the mood?
I'll tell you, people in Winnipeg are more excited about that too.
What's the mood right now with regard to the Thrasher sale? Is there trepidation that it's taking so long, or is there just pure glee in the streets about the fact it's coming?
Well, I think a bit of a quiet excitement. Building on this, people had a little bit of a jubilation moment when they first heard that it sounded like this was a done deal, and had a little mini party at Portage in Maine. But believe me, people are gearing up for something much bigger, and I think, you know, it's not going to rival what's going to happen on the streets of Vancouver if the Canucks win the Cup, but it's going to be a mini version of that. The people here are absolutely dying, bursting with excitement to just let it all out. And, you know, it goes back to 15 years ago when this team left, and many years after that of people thinking this would never happen, that the team would never come back. And then maybe since about 2005 when MTS Center opened, that's when people started to dream that it might happen, but that's been another 6 years. And it's just been building for so long, and then you had the whole Coyote saga for 2 years, and now the last few weeks or to a month of this whole Thrasher situation dragging out. I think it's going to be one exciting moment when this finally gets announced.
From what I'm reading online, you are following it the closest and have the best information. Where are you in terms of percentage in your gut as to how close this is to being done?
Oh, I really believe this is 99% that it's going to happen. I know from what I read in the one of the Atlanta papers that the owner, Michael Giron of the Atlanta Spirit Group, said it's 80% done, and that it's just a mountain of paperwork that they're sifting through to finish this off. When a guy says that, and he said there's nobody else negotiating and there's no real prospect of the team staying in Atlanta, you pretty much have to say that's a fairly solid source.
Yeah, for sure. Can there be any other nickname aside from the Jets? We're getting some strange suggestions and rumors here, so tell me they're not true.
I wish I could tell you that. I think, you know, there have been numerous reports, and some of them even from within the True North organization, that maybe they're looking at doing something else. I think they kind of like the Manitoba moniker that they've used with the Manitoba Moose. And when it comes to the Jets, the jury is out with some people as to whether it's right to do that again or to start fresh with a new name that doesn't hold the stigma that the Jets had as an NHL team, that doesn't have the same logo. You're going to have a chance to market something new if you go with a new name. So I'm absolutely torn as to which way it will go. If you want to know which way I want it to go, I would like it to be the Winnipeg Jets. I grew up with that team, and I lived and breathed it as a kid, and I would love to see that name back in this city and part of our identity once again.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Jets are the, for me, as a traditionalist and somebody who watched those great WHA Jets teams and excellent Jets teams in the NHL, just so you don't go with the Seals or anything, I think we'll be fine.
I'm pretty sure you won't get that. I think, you know, Manitoba Falcons has been thrown around, and I don't hate that name. It has a little bit of a Winnipeg tradition to it as well.
Yep, I agree. Have Winnipeg fans gone so far as to look at that Thrasher's roster and begin to dream about what a good hockey club that is?
Absolutely. We did that in the paper the other day, broke it down a little, you know, it's hard to not be excited about it because there's so many young players and so much young talent, starting with Evander Kane, who's just 19 years old. And Brian Little's only 23. Dustin Byfuglien's an old man on that team at 26. And they've got Alexander Burmistrov, you know, their first pick from last year. And I think a pretty decent defense, and Andrei Pavlik in goal at only 23 as well. And he was the Czech national team goalie this year as well. So I think that they're a really good young roster, and I think people are very excited about that. In some ways, more excited about that than they would have been about the Coyotes roster that could have conceivably come here as well. I think there's more of a feeling that this is more of an up-and-coming group.
What about the front office? Is there any thought of what will happen to the Moose front office, or what would happen with the Thrasher front office, or are we thinking too far ahead with that question?
No, it's been discussed. Every single thing on this matter has been discussed in the media, believe me. I mean, we've had so much to talk. I mean, the people are clamoring for every bit of information, so we've tried to give them as much as we possibly can. And I think when it comes to the front office of the Thrashers, that I would be extremely surprised if Rick Dudley doesn't run the draft this year. You know, it's only a few weeks away, and he's been doing it for a few years. I just can't imagine them not retaining him for a while. I'm quite convinced that Manitoba Moose general manager Craig Heisinger, who's done an absolutely fantastic job with that organization, is going to be sticking around. But will he be the GM right away? I'm not sure that that would be the way it would go. I think maybe an assistant GM role and maybe a grooming kind of a situation with him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ted, I remember the 79 entry draft that got the WHA teams into the NHL, and Winnipeg, along with Edmonton, but mostly Winnipeg, got shafted. Are there enough fans around there who remember that that maybe feel like the quality of this Thrasher teams is sort of payback karma making good?
I haven't heard anybody put it that way, but I certainly think that people do remember how Winnipeg got shafted, and it was really a completely unfair situation. I know a lot about the history of that, and really they could have come into the league, both the Jets and Oilers could have come into the league a year earlier with 15 players each. That was the original agreement. That fell apart, thanks in large part to Harold Ballard. And then they moved on, and the next time they came in, the NHL owners said, well, you can come in, but you're not bringing any of your players with you. And only Edmonton's great fortune was that Peter Pocklington, I think, made some pretty good side deals to keep some pretty darn good players. There was that one guy, 99. He seemed to be all right.
Yeah, he was pretty good. I remember watching the Jets and many different teams in that old building where you had to kind of move to see the breakaways because there was a post in front of you. And that team, the Winnipeg Jets that played during the 1980s and obviously right up until through 1996, have enough of those guys been interviewed about the possibility of the Jets coming back? And will any of them be associated with the team a la Bobby Hull and Makita with the Hawks?
Yeah, it's hard to say. We have, in fact, interviewed as a paper everyone we could think of. We're doing I shouldn't say too much, but we're doing a special section for when this happens. And we've talked to quite a few players. And there's Dale Hawerchuk and Bobby Hull and Anders Hedberg and Alf Nilsson and many of the guys from the NHL days, Paul McLean, some of the old goaltenders, Bob Esenza and Joe Daly, guys like that. You know, universally, they're thrilled that the Winnipeg Jets logo is coming back. We don't know for sure it'll be the Jets, but that Winnipeg will have a team in the NHL once again. Whether any of them would be asked to be a part of the team, it's hard to say. The one guy who does live in Winnipeg and is very prominent is Thomas Steen, but he is a Winnipeg City Councilor these days, so I'm not sure he'll be available to work with the hockey team.
Well, it's good to have connections, though, right? That doesn't hurt.
No doubt.
Yeah, I'm reading some, and some from Winnipeg. I'm reading some reports where there's a feeling like the fan base is really going to have to step up, and maybe some question about whether that's going to happen. I get the feeling that if this team ever gets back to Winnipeg, they'll never let it go, which is correct.
I agree with that, and my colleague from the Edmonton Sun, Terry Jones, wrote something very similar to that recently, saying, believe me, this team is, these people are not going to let this happen again. And I agree with Terry 100%. I think that that the team is going to be a huge part, a huge motivator for Winnipeg people, for hockey fans, for non-hockey fans alike, people involved in business. It puts you back into a major league category when you have a major league team. I think people really want that. I think people will absolutely support it. And what I've been told by many people is that Winnipeg's financial situation is very different from what it was in 1996. There's a lot of new money here now. And the people with the new money are the ones who are going to be counted on to snap up season tickets. And I think that's going to happen. And I've also heard of dozens and dozens of people that I know personally who are getting involved in consortiums to buy season tickets. They're going to get 10 or 20 or whatever and just be, very supportive in that way. Because there's a possibility that the True North people are going to say, you got to step up right now and show us that this is happening. Maybe as soon as next week.
You know, it's funny because I'm sitting here thinking we're very friendly and we're thinking about Winnipeg and how great it is. You come in here and kick our ass a couple of times and the relationship between Edmonton and Winnipeg is going to change in a heartbeat.
Well, it wasn't very friendly back in the 80s, at least not from our end. I'm sure that Edmonton didn't hate Winnipeg so much because they beat Winnipeg all the time, especially in the playoffs. So I would have to say that Edmonton was not, the Oilers were not well liked in Winnipeg in the 1980s. Neither were the Flames, neither were the Canucks. And I think that that probably has softened somewhat in the recent years, because without a team here, you sort of had to decide whether you liked other, you know, you could maybe move on and like a new team. And I think those teams developed some following, especially with each of them now having runs to the cup since that time. But, you know, I think the old rivalries will reestablish very quickly, although maybe it'll take a year, as it looks very likely that Winnipeg will end up playing in the Southeast Division next year.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting in that, you know, it's not a bad division for them to come into because they'll definitely be competitive. But do you think it'll be a year before they end up in the Northwest?
Well, that's what we're hearing, but again, that is speculation. I cannot say that for 100% sure. I've just been told that that is part of the issue. They're not, the Board of Governors aren't even meeting until June 21st. Now you're going to start doing realignment. I think there's going to be at least three teams that I can think of that would want to move to the Eastern Conference if Winnipeg moves to the Western Conference, and that would be maybe Nashville could move to the Southeast, Columbus would like to do it, and Detroit would like to do it. And only one of them is going to be able to. So it's going to be something that they're going to hash out over a period of time. And you know, I think Winnipeg fans are very excited about the prospect of playing in that different division just for 1 year, if it happens that way, because then you get a lot more Crosby, a lot more Ovechkin, a lot more Montreal and Toronto, Tampa Bay, Boston, Philadelphia, teams that you don't get to see as often, and you guys know in Edmonton, you don't get to see those teams all the time.
No, for sure. It can be years before you see them. By the way, Dean Millard is a co-host of the Pipeline show that comes on 2 hours before our show. He wanted to say hello to you and wish you the best.
Well, you say hello to him as well, and I've always enjoyed being on Dean's show, and we're old buddies from our days back in Brandon.
Pretty cheap, though, eh?
Well, you know, I mean, I think he might have bought me a beer sometime down the line.
Hey, Ted, we reserve the right to call you again, and thanks so much for this. We appreciate it.
I'd be happy to, and thanks for calling.
All right. Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun. Some interesting insight there. I do want to mention, he mentioned Terry Jones, and I have a note here to mention Terry's column today about the Alberta Sports Hall of Fame and the induction of the 63 Edmonton Oil Kings. It's on line right now and obviously in the Edmonton Sun as well. Terrific article. And for old-timey guys like me, it's a little reminiscing and a little looking back before we followed the game. But Edmonton sports, and specifically hockey, back to Normie Ullman and Johnny Buse, and those 60s teams with some great names like Bob Falkenberg and many, many more. Interesting article from Terry Jones today, and it involves the Eskimos too and a lot of other names that became very famous, maybe outside of hockey and some inside as well, so you might want to check it out. Coming up on Nation Radio, Craig Button and talking about the NHL draft.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And don't forget, we are on Twitter at It's Nation Radio, and you can email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. We're here until 2 o'clock today. A couple of emails to pass along. This is from Ross saying, if the Oil have lingering doubts about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and his NHL game, what about the following? Trade first overall to New Jersey for the fourth pick and Travis Zajac. With the fourth pick, select Couturier. The Oil are instantly bigger, deeper, and way more talented at center. New Jersey would likely get the most talented guy in the draft in Nugent-Hopkins and a future center for Covey, as well as some cap room. Tamby then trades Gagne to Atlanta for Bogosian, and we still have the 19th pick to grab a solid prospect, likely for the defenseman. Might be dreaming, that this seems to address a lot of needs. At some point, it might come about asset management. Thoughts from Ross. Well, let's go one by one. New Jersey trading the fourth pick and Travis Zajac, that to me is a rebuilding move. I don't think Lou Lamoriello is in rebuild mode. I think he'd be more likely to trade the fourth pick to trade down and get an asset that he can use, and that might interest the Oilers. New Jersey, they're a funny team right now because they are a little bit in transition. They've got that huge contract, and they've got Brodeur, who's aging. They've got some holes on defense. They have a lot of difficulty. I think they would trade to get younger, but I think they'd want NHL players. So the fourth pick may be in play because even if they draft someone like Larson or Couturier, it's going to take a while for them to get there to the National Hockey League and play at that level. But trading to get younger, I don't see New Jersey doing that. So the idea makes sense. I can see New Jersey dealing the fourth overall pick to the Oilers, but I bet you dollars to donuts that it would be for established NHL players. Tambellini then trades Gagne to Winnipeg for Atlanta, Winnipeg for Bogosian. That makes sense. I can see that move making sense from the Edmonton Oilers' point of view, getting Bogosian, that great big stud defenseman who's already got some NHL experience and has suffered through some growing pains. That's a move the Oilers can make. I honestly don't know what Atlanta would be doing slash Winnipeg would be doing. Gagne is a terrific young hockey player. I can see them absolutely wanting him. But at center ice, with the people that they've got like Kane, I don't know how Gagne would fit into the lineup. So, interesting stuff. The 19th pick, I think if the Oilers pick Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, their second first-round pick will definitely be a defenseman. And I've been thinking about this. At the top end, you've got, everybody says Larson, Dougie Hamilton, and Ryan Murphy are at the top. But remember last year when Cam Fowler fell to, I think it was 14th overall and ended up going to the Anaheim Ducks. I think that's a player that maybe Ryan Murphy might end up being that type of player to fall down to the middle of the first round. So there might be a chance for the Oilers to make a smaller trade, pick up Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at number one, trade the 19th pick plus something, and move up to, say, where Calgary is, which I believe is 13th overall, maybe a first and a second, or a first and a position player, and possibly have an opportunity to move up into that middle part of the first round and get a Ryan Murphy, or I don't think Dougie Hamilton will fall that far, but something interesting to pay attention to. And Ross, thanks so much for that email. Interesting one. An item that I did want to talk to you a little bit about, and we'll maybe get into it a little bit later on today, but wanted to mention it. Damian Cox of the Toronto Star recently reported that the Maple Leafs want to be in the bidding for Dallas Star center Brad Richards, if there is any. And I've often wondered about this, and maybe this is something you can mention on our Twitter account if you want to go to it. At It's Nation Radio. When does an NHL team show interest, and when is it actually, you know, collusion or them maybe impeding the opportunity for the team that owns their rights until July 1st to pick up that player, to sign that player? So I don't know if the NHL steps in very often, and they don't seem to ever step in when the Toronto Maple Leafs are involved, but something to talk about, and maybe we'll check out on that maybe in a future episode of Nation Radio. It's 12:48 now. We're joined by Craig Button from TSN and All Parts Media. Craig, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, Alan. How are you?
Good. Did your daughter win the race?
No, she didn't win the race, but it was the finals, and you know, it was her graduation this morning, so she had to race over, no pun intended, over to the city finals, and she finished seventh in the hurdles, which is a real good accomplishment for her.
And hurdles are tough, so good on her. And now, is she genetically gifted that way like you? Were you good at hurdles, Craig?
I was not good at hurdles. I would say that if her mother was here, she would say she's genetically gifted like her mother. And the other good thing, Alan, she's got her mother's look.
Oh, so you know.
There's no fear of her suffering from having to look like her father.
So she won't be staying in the house for the next 50 years then. So
No, she won't be.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Craig. Now, earlier this week, I wanted to ask you about that. Rick Olchuk from the Oilers said the team had their scouting meetings and were undecided about the first overall pick. Now, you've been a GM. Is that a mirage, or do you think it really is too close for them to call?
I think it is probably a little bit too close to call. I don't. This draft, I think last year it was much similar with Hall and Sagan. I mean, you're going through that debate. You know, there's the interview process coming up as well now, and where they're going to spend some more time with some of the top prospects. Which, when it's close, you know, you're trying to understand and gather as much information as possible to make the best decision. So I don't think it's a mirage, and there's not a clear-cut player. Like, it's not a case of a Crosby or an Ovechkin or a Lemieux or a Stamkos. There's a couple of players that can certainly merit every consideration for first overall.
when you were a GM in those meetings and then as a scout as well, how heated might the debate get if somebody is after Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and then somebody on the other side of the room is saying, look, Couturier is exactly what we need, that great big center. How heated do these debates get? And I guess the scouting director holds the trump card. He's the final guy.
Yeah, you know, I think I always found that from my experiences, whenever they were in whatever position, that you want to have those real hard, call it whatever you want, knocking down, drag me out type battles long before you get to this point. I think now this becomes really trying to ascertain. Everybody's position should be known. Everybody should say, hey, I like this guy or that guy or that guy. Now it really becomes a case of collaborating to understand, kind of go through the pros, the cons. What does it mean? Here's who we have in the system. Here's what we did last year. Here was the positive part of it. We had the same exact discussion, and this is what we ended up with. And you're really just trying to get to that point where, I don't know so much if it's about fighting for your spot, but just kind of saying, like, hey, listen, I think that we all can agree that we've reached the point where we think that this is the player that's best for us. And if I really believe that if you're having those arguments now, this guy over that guy, I think that you've missed something along the path.
Okay. How important is the combine to the final decision? Is it just verification of a player's qualities and physical ability, or are there still some nagging questions that might be answered via the combine and the answering process?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for all teams because you know, teams put different weight in different areas. So I'll speak from my own perspective. I think that the combine serves as an opportunity to see where players are currently in their physical development. For the most part, you're dealing with 17 and 18-year-old kids that have a lot of physical development ahead of them. And so you're going to get players that are more capable of doing some of the physical requirements better than others. But that doesn't mean that in 3, 4, 5 years' time that the player that isn't quite as capable will be able to do every bit as well. And I think that that's a big part of scouting is projection. So I think it gives you a really good sense of where the player sits in his physical development. My own caution is you better be careful about putting a lot of weight on combine testing, because I think more mistakes are made through what I call the wow factor than any other thing. And it's not just hockey. It happens in football all the time. You've spent the majority of the year watching these players on the ice and really feeling comfortable about what they can do on the ice. And you certainly don't want to go to a combine because a player only did 10 push-ups as opposed to another player that did 11 or did 21. And, you know, you're all of a sudden saying, oh, that guy should go up higher on the list. I think you got to be very careful of that.
That's a really interesting point. And you did bring up the NFL. That was my next question. Players often fall because of possible long-term issues like a degenerative whatever that may not impact them for several years. Do NHL teams have that level of medical information that they can evaluate?
Well, one of the big things that the combine, and I think it's a great, great service that is provided by the NHL, is that the players do go through medicals, and that identifies, you know, potential heart issues, any type of medical issues that may have been lingering, family history or whatnot, that they can delve into. And a lot of times, it's not even just so much about the fact that you're trying to about what you're trying to find out for your own team. Sometimes the fact is it helps the player know, like, especially when we deal with issues like you know, whether it be blood issues that show up, or whether it be with the heart that shows up. I think these are always good things for the player to be aware of that they may not even be aware of at that time. But mm-hmm. I don't think rarely have I seen, Alan, players at this age, even in the NFL, that you're talking about degenerative. What you might do is say, hey, you know, this guy had major knee surgery. What's the prognosis for him? What, you know, you get the full medical report on that.
Right.
But really, you're not really into the degenerative state yet for these young athletes.
Craig, when you did your mock draft a while back, you had Jonathan Huberdeau second overall, and that raised some eyebrows. Now you're looking like a genius based on his strong playoff and what he's doing in the Memorial Cup. Is that the kind of thing that you were talking about with it's dangerous to go with an oh wow when you've seen a player all year closing strong like that, or does that impact a draft?
Well, you know, I'll give you an example, Alan. I'll answer the question just in general. I'll give you an example. I think that you watch these players over time, and back in September, there was a lot of players that had, like, you know, let's just take Sean Couturier for an example. And I think Sean Couturier is a really good player, and people have asked me, geez, has he fallen off? And I say, no, he hasn't fallen off. But he was at a certain stage of his development where he was far advanced than certain other players. And now what's happened since September, October, January, is other players now have developed and advanced their game. It's not so much that Sean Couturier hasn't developed. It's the fact is that these other players have really taken a step ahead. And so I think you got to evaluate over the course of the year. Jonathan Huberdeau, I think, was a player that you have to keep an eye on, and certainly through his play over the course of the year, the second half specifically, he's really established himself. You know, when you get to the Memorial Cup, I think, again, you better be careful about putting too much weight on a performance, good or bad. You know, in 1995, we drafted Jerome McGinley in Dallas, but we went to the Memorial Cup, and that was a year with a lockout. So there was a lot of gaps in the scouting year because of teams weren't sure what was going to happen. You didn't get as many viewings of them. We went to the Memorial Cup, and we really, really liked Jerome McKinley. It wasn't a question of do we like him or don't we like him? Do we think he's a prospect? Don't we think? But what happened at the Memorial Cup was what we really determined at that point in time was we didn't want to risk. We were talking about trading back, because he was rated a little bit lower.
Right.
If I recall correctly, he was rated 26th by Central Scouting. So sometimes you try to factor that in and go, okay, maybe you can let a team move up. You fall back, get an extra pick or a player. And what we did leaving that Memorial Cup was saying, we are not moving back at the risk of losing Jerome McGinley. So it wasn't that we liked him or that we liked him more, liked him less. We just kind of evaluated it and said, we better stay right here to ensure that we have a shot at him.
Interesting. Interesting answer. How difficult would it be for the Oilers to trade up from 19 into that top 8? Would it require position players, a combination of, or is it just impossible to trade that far up?
Well, you know, everybody tries to trade up, Alan. You know, everybody talks about trading up. But, you know, when you start to layer the draft, and what I mean by layer the draft, you start talking about your top group of players, and whether that be 5, 6, 7, 8 players, whatever it is, there's distinct lines at different points that say, okay, this is a top player here, this is the next group of players. And when you're trying to move from 19 into the top 8, you're moving into a different category of player. So to move into that is really difficult to do unless you're going to make a significant trade. And I don't. It's not just your pick. I think it becomes a top prospect or a real good solid player off your team, because this is the category of player that teams are talking about in that top 8, 9 player selection area. So everybody talks about it. Rarely is it able to be accomplished.
Yeah. Okay, where are you going to be on the day of the draft, and where can we read you and hear you and see you on the day of the draft?
Well, on the day of the draft, I'm going to be in Minneapolis, and I'm going to be doing a whole lot of work for TSN leading up to the draft. I'll be working with TSN on the draft. And then on the next day, second day of the draft, I'll be doing draft coverage for the NHL Network.
Sounds terrific. Craig, we appreciate this so much. You give great insight, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Alan. Have a great day.
You too. That's Craig Button, who's obviously a dad and expert. And, you know, a lot of people are, I noticed on my blog today, there's a little bit of discussion about Craig Button and his scouting history and referencing when he was GM in Calgary. He was not the scouting director, obviously, as GM. He was a scouting director when in Dallas. And their draft record, if you go back and look up Craig Button's draft record, It's outstanding. The guy knows his stuff, and we really appreciate him coming on and being a part of the show. This is Nation Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Also email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Interesting show today. Coming up, Mary Duhamel, and we're going to talk to him about Sean Couturier and his draft number.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
You can access it at Nation Radio, the team 1260.com. Also on Twitter at it's Nation Radio. Twitter will be the death of me. We have other John, too, saying love Button's comments, retrading 19th to 8th or 10th in the draft. Different layer of the draft, very informative. And a few other ones on there as well, which you can go online and we will read when we get off the air. It's about 5 minutes after 1 o'clock. We have a very jam-packed show in the second hour. Ian Walker, who we've talked to a few times, talked to us about the Vancouver Canucks and the fan base and how humble they are on the eve of their third Stanley Cup trip. And Mike Spadell from Hockey Symposium, a gentleman who has done a lot of work on each draft since about, I think, 2005 or so, and is a very insightful guy who looks at math and some other things and comes up with an interesting and different top 30 every year, and we'll see how he's progressing and who he feels should go number one overall. I have a feeling it might be, or at least close to the top, will be Sean Couturier. And yesterday I had a chance to sit down and talk to Mario Duhamel, head coach of Drummondville, about his career, how well things are going for himself, and about Sean Couturier and maybe why he's falling a little bit in the draft. And here's that interview. All right, Mario, we're going to talk about Mr. Couturier, but first let's talk about you. Some news involving yourself over the last 24 hours. Hockey Canada announcing yesterday its coaching staff for the Canadian men's under-18 team that'll participate in the Ivan Hlinka, and you'll be part of that staff.
Yeah, that's right. I'm very glad and I'm very proud to be part of a Hockey Canada program, because it's a very nice honor. It's an honor for me to represent our country, that's for sure.
And you've been a part of Team Canada's in the past, correct?
I've been in the under-17 team and Team 14 Quebec a couple of years ago, yes, and it was in Port Alberni, Victoria.
And is that, in terms of your coaching resume, does that get you into, like, more international opportunities?
Sure, that's for sure, but also to get good contacts with people from the other leagues, from the Western and Ontario leagues, so to communicate with other coaches, see how they work in their league, all the experience. If you look to the two coaches who's going to be part of it with me, a lot of experience, a great experience in AHL from Don, who coached AHL, Sputter, who's been with the Kitchener Rangers for a while, then live at the Memorial Cup experience, so they and also with Team Canada, a lot of experience. Both guys have a lot of experience with the program, so they'll be able to give me a lot of cues, and I'll be also able to help them. So I think it's going to be a great fit.
You had a difficult transition in that when you arrived in Drummondville, that was a successful team. Now you continued that success. Was that a difficult transition for you? Was that something that you obviously you were looking forward to it, but did you feel a lot of pressure?
Not much pressure. For sure, it was to replace Guy Boucher. It was something huge, and we all know that Guy is doing a tremendous job now with the Tampa Bay Lightning, so Guy is a great coach. So, but I didn't take that as a pressure. I took that as a challenge, and Guy did a great job with the Volsure before, and we do have a great culture in Drummondville since the last 8 years with the new ownership that we have in Drummondville. So we all know that the business starts from the top, and our president is a great guy, Mr. Verrier, who's doing a great job every day, and we have a good vision. It's clear vision that we have in Drummondville, so when the players come to our camp and comes to our organization, they already know what we expect from them and what kind of team that we are and what kind of player that we like. So the vision is very clear, so that helps us as a coaching staff to produce and make them produce.
And you have one of the things that I've noticed about your organization is you're very aggressive with trades and procurement, acquiring players to make you better, and that must be something the fan base appreciates, a team that is really aggressive at those opportunistic times.
That's for sure, because I truly believe that we have a great GM in Drummondville, Dominique Ricard, who's been a coach before, who coached the Voltigeur a couple of years ago, just before Guy. So after he moved only because he was doing both jobs, and after he moved only to do the GM, and he hired Guy, and after he hired me, and Dominique is a great GM who has a good eye, and he really feels the game, and he knows exactly what we need. When we talk together, it's easy to talk with him, and he's really behind the coaching staff all the time, so he goes with what the team needs. And yes, he's aggressive. Like 2 years ago, we got Jake Allen right after the World Junior, Crazy Domenico the year before. So Dominic is doing a great job, and he's not afraid. He's not afraid to do some move to make sure that we're going to stay very competitive, and that's what we want, and that's what it's not easy, but that's what we want. So we do everything in our best to stay on top.
Let's talk a little bit about Sean Couturier and his season. At the beginning of the year, he was one of the individuals who had an opportunity to finish number one overall in the rankings for the draft. And he had a great year, played on the World Junior team, suffered a bout of mono, and he comes out of the season maybe not being in the top four or five. What do you think are the reasons behind him being ranked a little lower now than he was entering the season?
Just like you said, at the beginning, for sure his mono hurt a lot before a big year like it was with the year he was coming in this year. So that hurts him because he had to recover all year. You never recover easily from a mono, so it takes time. And all year he had to handle with that. But I think that also with all the pressure that he put on himself, because if you know Sean is a quiet guy. He's an introverted guy who really cares about the team. He's not a flashy. He's a guy who's really, really efficient on the ice and also off the ice. He's a good leader, but he's a quiet leader. He's more of a leader by actions. And all the media attention, I think he didn't handle that very well at the beginning, putting pressure on himself, missing the training camp, all that stuff. So he knew that he was late in his development for the season, so he wanted to recatch that right away. So and all the stress for Team Canada, he wanted to be part of, and he did it, and he did well. And the prospect game, so he didn't have much time to recover, because if you look to his last three seasons, he went to Memorial Cup, he played for the under 17, under 18 Team Canada now. So Sean had a lot of hockey behind him in the past three seasons, so he was kind of tired a little bit this year. We could see that he was tired, and he had a lot to lose this season instead of winning, because everybody was expecting to see him playing well, and that's what he did. But he's not a guy who will put a lot of points on the board, but he always finish, if you look to his stats the last two seasons, plus 66, plus 55, so he's always there, and he plays well both sides of the puck, so that's one of his strengths. And when he was focusing to make points, he was struggling with that. But he's a guy who's very, very efficient offensively and defensively, and that's exactly what he has to focus on.
You mentioned good offensively and defensively, and I love hearing that he's good on the other side of the puck too. Did you use him in all situations, power play, penalty kill?
Oh yeah, for sure. Sean is the kind of guy that you want to have on the ice at the end of a game, or if you need a goal, or if you want to make sure that you will deny a goal. So he's there, and he's a centerman who's good on face-off also. He's not afraid to block shot, and like we said earlier, so he plays both sides, so he's really, really efficient. So that's the type of player that you know is going to be reliable on the ice.
What does he need to work on as a coach? I know that you're always working on everything, face-offs and that sort of thing, but in order to get to the next level, what does he really need to focus on as a player?
For me, he has to focus on his strength, physical strength. He's a guy who's strong physically for his age. If you look in our league, when he had the puck, it was very, very tough to take the puck away from him, because he protects very well the puck. But for sure, for the next level, he has to keep improving, because he's a 6 foot, almost 4 inches, and he's 200 pounds. So he needs to get bigger and stronger in his legs. So that's going to help also for his speed. Sorry. for his pure speed and also for explosion, because when he's on when he's in movement, his speed is very good. But for sure, the first three steps he has to need to improve. But that's going to come with the strength of his legs. So he really has to work off the ice, and that's why he needs to have a little rest this year. We lost in the second round. That was bad for us. We lost against a good team, but for him, I think it was a good thing to have a good rest and take time for him to recover and have time to train, because we all know that he's going to go at the training camp for Team Canada also this summer. So, and all the attention for the initial draft. So he needed that time, and I think that for him, that was a good timing for him to rest.
I like what you said about his speed. That's very descriptive, and I appreciate that. Now, the thing that people have talked about is his foot speed and his not aggressive or quick start. But how many big men do we really see who have a really quick start from a stopping position? Joe Thornton, maybe Le Cavalier is a quicker big player, but they're very rare, right?
That's right. That's right. You're right on. And it takes time. You know, Le Cavalier, he improved that with his strength year after year. Didn't come quick and easily. So like Joe Thornton, like you say, that's a very good example too. So it's tough. But when they are on their way, they gain their top speed, and after they're stop to stop because of their reach and everything. But Sean is not a slow skater. He's a good skater. And if you play at the World Junior and you can follow the play, that's for sure you're going to be able to follow the play in the NHL, because if you look to the speed and the level of intensity that the World Junior is, you know that if you compete there, you'll know that your speed won't be a problem after in the NHL.
He's a smart kid, a hardworking kid.
He is. Sean is a very smart kid who is taking care of everything. He's a guy who wants to be good. He wants to be perfect. And maybe sometimes that hurts him. But on the other side, he's very well appreciated from his partner, because he's not a flashy guy, like I told you before. He's an introverted guy who really cares about the team first. This year, he never talked about his NHL draft or Team Canada. In Christmas, he was always talking and thinking about the team first. For sure, he always have internal motivation, and that was one good objective, to be a part of Team Canada, and after now to be drafted. But in his main point, he knew that if we was performing well, that the team would perform, and if we finish fourth this year in our league overall, it's because of Sean Couturier. If Sean Couturier wouldn't be with us, wouldn't be in that position at the end of the season.
Now, speaking of having Sean Couturier, do you anticipate him coming back for another year, or do you think he'll go right to the NHL?
Honestly, it's tough to say now. There's a lot of guys that you don't expect, and they stay and they do well. The example, Jeff Skinner in Carolina. A year ago, nobody expected to see him play in NHL, and he did a tremendous job. So it's tough to say now. It all depends where you end up, when you finish, and when you end at any team, and are you a right fit right away in that team? So it's tough to say, but what we always said is we want the best for him, and if the best is to play NHL, that's what we want. We always want to make sure that our player is going to develop and reach the next step. So for us, we do like if Sean wouldn't be back with us next year, and if he's back, for sure we'll give him the number 7 again, but we don't expect to see him back. It's simple like that. No bad surprise.
Now, are you watching the Memorial Cup at all?
Yes, I am in Mississauga since Sunday, so I watch it all, but yep.
What are your impressions of some of the draft-eligible kids, guys like Huberdeau and some awesome players on the St. John squad?
St. John has a tremendous team. They're a very fast, very skilly team. They were the best team in our league this year by a mile, and they've been number one ranking since day one, and now they're in the final on Sunday. They have a really skilly team, like I said. They move the puck well. They skate well. Guys like the Galiev, Yuriko, you talk about Huberto, Phillips, and their decor is very good also. They're very their lateral movement is very good, the quick feet and all that stuff, so, and they have a good vision. But for sure, they have a great team. It's going to be tough to stop them. in their rest full since Tuesday, so they're going to be in shape for Sunday's game. But yes, they have a great team, and a lot of guys from that team going to be drafted early in the draft. They seem to play well together, but for sure they have talent.
What about the Kootenai Ice? Have you had a chance to watch them? Anybody stand out to your eye?
For sure, Cody Eakin. Cody Eakin and King also played well last night on the tiebreaker. I think Fraser stepped up. I don't know them a lot. Didn't see them play a lot this year, but for sure, Cody Eakin play very well. You all know him as a hockey player. He's a guy who has a great shot, can move the puck also. He's in the tournament. He's very intense, so that becomes tough to stop him.
Now, for your team, for Drummondville, are you finished up for the year? Or are you doing any summer camps, or do you just come back in September?
We do have something because our draft is next week, June 4th, and our league draft is June 4th, so the week after, we do have a little day with all our older player and the new guys that we just draft to get in touch together. We have a physical test and also an online practice with our new guys that we show already our standard for the training camp, and they know more each other, and they know us, and they know how we proceed on the ice and all that stuff. So just make sure that they are more at ease with the situation when they arrive. And our camp will start after August 15. Everything start for us for the next season.
Well, Mario, thanks so much for this. And make sure to hit the golf course a few times this summer.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Mario Duhamel, head coach of Drummondville Voltigeurs, and interesting insight into Sean Couturier, who I still think might end up being the best player to come out of this draft. The foot speed thing is a little galling because it's one of those things that you see over the years, and I always use the example of the big man. The curse of the big man is he always looks like he's not working hard. You see Ty Domi, I mean, if you remember him skating down the ice, he looked like he was passing a kidney stone every time he skated, and Joe Thornton still looks like the wind's just blowing him in the right direction, and he's a huge guy, and yet Joe Thornton has always been called late. You know, we talked about Dustin Penner earlier in the show. Here's a guy who's big and looks lumbering. Frank Mahovlich, same problem, and I think Sean Couturier is a little bit of a victim of that, and you know, Stu McGregor is a great scouting director, and the other scouts know what they're doing. They've done a fabulous job since 2008, and you know, you have to have a great amount of faith as a fan that they're going to pick the right guy, but it drives me nuts when we talk about foot speed, and now we hear from the coach, and there's no real problem of first step quickness, and that's something that a lot of these kids have a problem with. I think Sean Couturier, the drop in the draft is going to be interesting, but I bet you he doesn't go past New Jersey at number 4, and if Lou ends up taking him and he ends up being a big, big star, then it's going to be one of those things I think that a lot of NHL teams regret. Coming up, we're going to talk more draft with Mike Spidell from Hockey Symposium.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
127, it's Barcelona 1 and the Yankees 1, and we'll keep you updated on that. Man, you just scored. You can follow Nation Radio on Twitter at It's Nation Radio, and also Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. That is our email address, and we invite your questions and comments all the time, and of course, we read back as many as we possibly can. Joined now by Speeds from Hockey Symposium, Michael Spidell. Michael, how are you?
Very good. Nice to talk to you all.
Nice to talk to you as well. One of the things that I always look forward to is your draft list every year. When do you start making up your list? When do you start thinking about publishing your results? And how much time do you devote to it?
Well, I'd say I've kind of loosely been putting it together throughout the course of the season. I've got, you know, some sort of outline of where I'm going to go. The first list that I publish will probably come out Wednesday or Thursday next week just to start June. And then I'll do a final list by the time maybe a day or two before the draft.
Okay. We talked to Mario Duhamel just a minute ago about Sean Couturier. Why do you think he's fallen so much? Is it mono, skating, or a combination of all those things?
I think it's a combination of all the things. I think one of the things might be that he had supposedly not said that he's not doing interviews with the media. And I think for teams that if you're planning to make these players a focal point of your franchise, and you've got all these other guys that look about equally as well, talented, then why take the guy that you're kind of concerned might have trouble with a market like Edmonton.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because you've got obviously the kid like Taylor Hall who comes in and instantly becomes the face of the franchise. It's going to be a lot of pressure on him. He's from Phoenix, though. That shouldn't be a difficulty. Is it just that he's the very shy, retiring, say, Jay Bouwmeester type?
It could be. I think the other part of it is, the coach was saying earlier, that he's just very subtly boring, maybe would be a good way to put it, where he's not so flashy. And I think the scouts like to see these dynamic skills because they think maybe it translates better. And maybe it does, but sometimes I kind of wonder if it does or if it's just you want to see those dynamic skills.
Do you have or will you have Couturier at or near number one on your list?
I would say that I tentatively have him at one, yes.
Yeah. I think he's I think he is likely to be either the best player in this draft or close to. What's your feeling on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins?
Well, I'm a huge sucker for hockey sense, so he's right up there for me too. It's tough to ignore when so many scouts say that he's just so elite in that area.
Yeah, and what is your feeling on the power play to even strength points ratio? How do you feel about that?
I'd prefer if he had more even strength points. I don't know. The scouts really seem to be so sold on his hockey sense that you kind of wonder if it's just that they think he'll be so much better once he starts to play with better players that they're kind of factoring that along with him gaining size, and that's what puts him at number one for them.
Yeah, the thing that really started me thinking about it is actually the last time Craig Button was on, we discussed Nugent-Hopkins, and he was very bullish on him to the point where I had asked him about time on ice at even strength, about power plays and all of that sort of thing. And his issue was, look, the guy is just flat-out talented, and I don't care about the ice time. I don't care about all those other things. When you see this kind of vision, you have to go for it. And I think it might be a rare example of a Sam good. The overwhelming evidence is so good, and his statistics aren't that far off. And in terms of even strength, he's about equal to where Sam Gagne was as a junior. So do you see the Oilers possibly taking him, and if they do, keeping him in junior for another year?
I definitely think they're going to take him because if it was, well, and this is just if I was running the draft, I would not want to let the impression be going out there that that's the guy you're going to take if you don't take him, because he's the hometown guy. He plays down the road in Red Deer. Fans are kind of building up this affinity for him. And then if you go off the board and take Huberdeau or Couturier, well, there's a bit of a backlash where if Nugent-Hopkins doesn't work out down the road, you're going to be second-guessed an awful lot more than if you take Nugent-Hopkins and Couturier turns out.
Great point. Now, at the top of the draft, do you have Adam Larson there as well, or are there some other forwards who've snuck in before him?
I would say my top five right now consists of some order of Couturier and Nugent-Hopkins, Huberdeau, Strome, and Larson.
Okay. So let's talk about them individually. We've already talked about Couturier and Nugent-Hopkins. Let's talk about Larson next. Big defender, maybe not the offensive upside. That's why I kind of nicked him as well. I've got him at number four, just because if you're going to draft that high, you really want to get the elite player if you can.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with that. He'd probably be at fifth on my list right now, and it's not really a knock on him, but it's just if you have a chance to grab a top two-line center versus a top pairing, well, I guess if he becomes a number one defenseman, you're happy to have him, but the forwards are just so much harder to get that if it's even close, I think you have to go with the forward.
Right. And let's talk about Huberdeau. I've seen him a little bit, and then I've been watching him at the Memorial Cup. He really is a sick skill player.
Yeah. Him and Strome actually look kind of similar to me, except for Huberdeau is on a bit better of a team. Well, a lot better of a team.
What about size for Strome, though? He's 6 foot, but he's not exactly as skinny as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but I think a little bit about durability when talking about Strome.
Yeah, that's what I find so interesting about Strome consistently being lower in the rankings than Nugent-Hopkins is they seem to talk over, on and on about how Strome is kind of weak for his size, and I don't know if that means that he's not very muscular for his size or what they're thinking, but they definitely seem to knock him for it more than Nugent-Hopkins.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I find that I don't really have an answer. Strome is about 15 pounds heavier from what I can tell, and it would seem as though he might just be that much more advanced physically. I guess we'll have to find out. What about the other defensemen? I've started thinking that there's a possibility the Oilers will trade up from 19 to grab a defenseman, and the players most often mentioned are Ryan Murphy and Doogie Hamilton, although there are some others like Joe Morrow that are in there, Nathan Bolo. Who do you see as being a possible trade up for defenseman value-wise, and do you see the Oilers doing that and picking a defenseman?
Well, I think that they may well do that, and if they do it, I think they will move up for a defenseman, but I don't know if they'll get either Hamilton or Murphy, because I think they kind of fall on that consensus top eight, and I just don't know if they'll be able to get up that high.
Who among the top 30 or so are you thinking is going to be much higher on your list than the list that we've seen in the last little while?
I would say probably Grimaldi. He's a guy that I really like. He's very small, so I don't know if a lot of teams will like him. And I generally tend to favor those guys a bit more than most people do. I also really like that. I'm not quite sure how to say his name. That Kolklachev from
right
from Windsor there. He's so young. He's got very good numbers, and coming over from Russia, it's just such an adjustment for that guy. First year in the OHL, first year on the small ice. He's so young for the league that I kind of wonder if he might just explode in the next year or two.
Right. Well, while we're on the subject of players whose names I can't pronounce, let's talk about Mika Zibanejad. What's your opinion of him? He seems to be making a late move up the charts.
Yeah, I think he's the guy that the scouts are looking at the skills and just projecting that. And so there's just very little for me to comment on other than that he seems to be a guy that seems to go in the top 10, 15 on pretty much everyone's list now. So there's got to be something there.
Yeah. Last year you had the top of the draft spot on, Hall, Sagan, Granlund, Tarasenko. I noticed that you and I pretty much agreed that we were going to nick the defenseman, and by that I mean obviously Fowler fell farther than we thought, but Gudbranson also in there, Gormley, we nicked them a little bit and they went higher than we projected. Do you think that the NHL is slowly but surely learning that those non-offensive or stay-at-home defensemen being picked that high, the Keaton Ellerbys, all of those guys, that it doesn't give you value?
I think they're kind of trying. Some teams are learning that, but some aren't, and I don't know if Florida made a mistake necessarily grabbing Gudbranson, but he's the kind of guy that, for whatever reason, teams just seem to love, these character guys. Actually, I think if I was doing a mock draft, it'd be pretty tough to put Landeskog going past Florida, because he's basically a better forward version of Gudbranson.
Right. The one defenseman that I'm noticing that there's a wide degree of difficulty as far as slotting him is Duncan Siemens, the big kid out of Saskatoon. How do you see him?
I see him as a mid to late first round defenseman.
Okay, so you're thinking 15 to 30 or so?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
What about goaltenders? Anybody that that you see who possibly could slide into the first round?
It's tough to say who could slide into the first round, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if the Oilers grab someone at 31 or 61.
Right. I can agree with that, too. I think that there's a possibility just based on at some point in time in the next few years, I think they'll take the next goaltender. They got a couple of depth picks that may turn out, but it's always a good idea to stock as many as you can. What about this kid, Sven Barchi? We saw him play for Portland, and he scored a lot. He looks really good, not terribly fast, but really sick stick handler and a good scorer.
Yeah, he's in my top 10 right now, and I think he looks like a really good bet going forward.
And Mark McNeil, the big center from PA, what's your opinion on him?
Yeah, I really like him too, but I don't think I like him quite as much as Bob Stauffer. He's a guy that looks like he's got a lot of potential, and I would have a tough time deciding between him and Scheifele if I was someone picking around that 13, 15 area.
Yeah, I think they're both going to go, and the only problem with picking them as high as like 10 to 13, there's going to be some skill like Armia and Zach Phillips on there. Don't you want to exhaust all the guys who could end up being Jeff Skinner, say, before you go into the guys with the two-way potential but you know aren't necessarily going to be a number one center?
Yeah, I think you might see guys like Pumpel go a little bit earlier than he's projected just for that reason.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, where can we read you, Mike?
I'm at hockeysymposium.blogspot.com.
Really appreciate this, and hopefully we'll have you back before the draft. I'd love to hear your top 30 and maybe go through it.
Sounds great.
All right. Mike Spidell from Hockey Symposium Speeds, well-known on all of the oil blogs over the years, and, of course, originally from HF Boards. That's where we all kind of got together. And, if you haven't followed his version of the draft over the years, you can go to Hockey Symposium. He does a really good job of breaking down each year's draft, and last year he did a splendid job. And I think, really, as time goes on, his list is going to look a lot stronger than most people's, just because he did nick those stay-at-home defensemen a little bit more and value value-wise as time goes on. It's really hard for those folks to cover off and beat like a Cam Fowler, who came in and played very well and delivered some offense as well. This is Nation Radio. We're available on Twitter at It's Nation Radio, also at Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. We invite your emails and we'll read them back as we have an opportunity. One that came to us last week with regard to Milan Lucic. We talked a little bit about Lucic with Kirk Ludicky, and people were saying that he could be a late second rounder. Anything about Kyle Beach's situation would be interested to know. This came from Ross. I did check it out, and I think Kyle Beach is rumored to be signing in Europe for next year. So that's an interesting item and something that maybe the Oilers can look at down the line. Of course, they lost Liam Reddick this year, same way. Spent a couple of years over in Europe and sometimes come back to the National Hockey League. So we still have one more guest on Nation Radio, and that's Ian Walker. We'll talk to Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Just checking ourselves on Twitter at It's Nation Radio, and Pat Steinberg is much funnier there than I've heard him anywhere else. So that's interesting. You can keep that up. That'll be absolutely terrific. Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun is unavailable because it's very difficult for newspaper people to work 6 days in a row. I'm only teasing, but you can check him out at Walker Big Talker. He does great Twitter stuff. I was going to pick on him today. There's a photo stream that I think from a couple of days ago where he does bungee jumping, dragon boat, kite surfing. He's a tackling dummy for the BC Lions. It's good stuff. Ian Walker is an entertaining guy. You want to check that out if you have an opportunity, because it's good, good stuff. This is Nation Radio. We are on Twitter now at It's Nation Radio, and you can also email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. Interesting item this week on Doug Weight. We talked about it at Oilers Nation, and Jason Greger had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Weight on Thursday afternoon. Thought we'd play a little bit of that interview because it's an outstanding interview, and on top of that, Doug Weight is a legend in this town, and here's what they had to say.
As Doug Weight joins us right now. Doug, congratulations on a successful career. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, Doug, you know, Oilers fans had sent in a lot of emails and such when they'd heard earlier this week that your retirement was coming. You know, you really kind of made a name for yourself with the Oilers, especially in that 95-96 season when you had the 25 goals and 104 points, and then followed that up with the 82 and 70-point campaigns and another 90-point campaign, I think, in 2000-2001. I want to go back to when you were traded, and there's always some great folklore tales about that trade that happened with you and the Rangers and you and Esa Tikkanen, and basically you switch bags, essentially switch locker rooms and such. Was it true you weren't able to tell your wife you'd been traded until she saw you in an Oiler uniform on the ice? And B, did you actually think Sean Podine was European because of the way his name was spelled?
Those are, well, one, the first one, first of all, we did switch bags because we were on a four-game road trip with the Oilers. So when I got the wake-up call from my coach, I went over, I had to change rooms. They threw everything in a shopping cart, and I passed Esa in the hallway, and he said something to me. I don't know. I don't even think Finns understand Esa Tikkanen. So he said something. I went in, and Allison found out in the concourse on the way in. So she saw me, and at that time she was my girlfriend, but now my wife. But yeah, I went out and warm up, but I was a little late for warm up getting out there, and I saw her by the glass crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? But an incredible day, and yeah, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, though, going to Edmonton and experiencing my best years. And really, I said a couple times today, I knew within 6 months of why they won five Stanley Cups, just the accountability and the responsibility they have throughout that organization, given to the players and given to the people that work there, and their focus and camaraderie. It was just an awesome place to have a big bulk of my career, and it was great.
Was the Sean Podine story a myth, or was that true?
Nope, it was true. I made it. Who spells her name? S-H-J-O-N. And I think Sean, he didn't say much the first period, so I was like, oh, this guy, well, I wonder where he's from. I've never heard of him. And I reached, I think it was either Shane Corson or Kelly Buckner. I asked if he was Swedish. And Podes heard me, and Podes ended up being one of my better friends, and I lived with him a little bit. It was funny. We tell the story. He's like, hey, I'm from Minnesota. So it was good.
That's awesome. Doug, Ryan Rashog from TSN here. Congratulations, by the way.
Hey, thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it.
So the press conference today, you almost cracked, eh? Like, did you whereabouts were you? Because it looked from the little bit that I saw, it looked like you almost went. There were some tears happening.
I felt really good about this decision for a long time, and I mean, last month, and I felt like I was going to be able to motor through this, and I didn't even get the word retirement out, and I stopped, and I had to hold, you know, take a sip of water.
A few pauses, yeah.
This is not going to be good, but you know what's funny is going through my, I had written down about 8 or 9 pages, took about 12 minutes, and I wanted to recap some things, but with each chapter of my career, and you know, I got to Edmonton, and I needed about 20 seconds, because all those memories come flooding through, and you know, that was a very special place for me in my heart. It always will be, and great people I've met on the ice within the organization, great times, great place to play, and you know, so many people touched me there and taught me so much there, and I just really owe the city and the team and the organization a lot.
A lot of guys retire because, you know, they feel like their bodies can't handle the play anymore. Some guys retire because their game isn't where they want it to be. I mean, Doug, you were the captain of this team, Doug. I mean, people would say you had plenty of game left. What was your reasoning for wanting to, you know, to pack it in now, deciding now is the right time?
You know, over the last 3 years, it's been tough. I think I've lost about 125 games on the table and missed in injuries, and that's a lot. And after a while, you know, you're saying these freak injuries, they add up, and they start mentally taking its toll and physically taking its toll. And this year, I found a couple breaks in my back, and I've healed that up. And then I've been just sticking out of my L3, L4, and all these things were going on, and it just hasn't healed up right. And it's not necessarily the injuries. I think it's time. I think, you know, the wear and tear of the game, some guys it hits at 32, and some guys it hits at 45. And, you know, I'm 40 years old. I had a wonderful career, and I'm proud of it. But it's time. The worst thing is I feel like when I'm healthy, I'm still a good player. I love to play. I love to practice and love to train. So that disappoints me, and it disappoints me what I left on the table. But no regrets, and I'm ready for it and look forward to the new chapter. And it's going to be awful not being able to walk out of the tunnel, not being able to compete and everything else, and that's the worst part of it. But I love the game. I'm going to be around the game, and I have some great years ahead with my family, and I look forward to those.
That's Doug Weight after his retirement, talking to Ryan Rashog and Jason Greger here on Team 1260. And what a class guy. You know, I listened to his entire press conference when he retired, and he did break up when he was talking about the Oilers, and he sent a hat tip to Glenn Sather and also to the management group, Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish at the time, and all of his teammates. And he shared some great memories about, you know, passing the puck to Todd Marchant in 97 and just watching him fly. And, you know, Doug Weight was one of those guys who was an absolute leader, and it didn't take him long to adjust to the city, and he talked about that and how much he loved it and the role that he played, which was as leader. And he certainly proved that. He did. There are so many memories that, as an Oiler fan, I have of Doug Weight, from those ridiculous saucer passes that would land just on the tape of Ryan Smith or Billy Guerin. And the fact that, you know, honestly, the 2006 Stanley Cup run aside, the Doug Weight Oilers were more successful than any team since the great runs of the Stanley Cup team, the boys on the bus, between 95 and 01, around that. They won several series. They went deep into the playoffs, and they were a great team, top to bottom. And a lot of that had to do with the leadership of Doug Weight. So, interesting interview, and glad we had an opportunity to pass it along to you today. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about the fact that we're pretty excited we're on Twitter now at It's Nation Radio. We also want your opinion about what you'd like to see and hear on the radio station during Nation Radio over the next little while, because we're talking draft leading up to, and we're going to do a live show at the Pint on the Saturday, day two of the draft day. But after that, and leading into the summer, and even leading up to it, we'd like your opinion about what you'd like to hear, guests that you'd like to be on, you know, that sort of thing. You want to add prizing, dancing girls, Wanye, if he wanted to make an appearance, because, you know, I think he's going to have to talk with one of those. I don't even know if he can speak. That's the honest to God truth. I just get people knock on my door and say it's a message from Wanye, and often it's in a brown bag and on fire. But, you know, he's a guy, and I know I've met him once, and I had never heard him speak, but possibly we could get him on the show as well. So if you're interested in adding to Nation Radio what you want to hear, do it on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. You can also email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. One thing I want to lead you to today, if you're an Oiler fan and a fan of Edmonton hockey, Terry Jones did a great article, I think in this morning's paper, certainly online this morning, about the Alberta Sports Hall of Fame, the induction of the 1963 Edmonton Oil Kings. And he talks about the 63 Edmonton Oil Kings, the 66 team that won the Memorial Cup, all of those players, some great names like Greg Pilling, Bob Falkenberg, Burton Marshall, Glenn Sather was on that team, and some other folks who ended up being members of the community and moved on to other sports, and just the organization as a group, and obviously the Edmonton Oilers, Bill Hunter came out of that, and going back a little bit farther too to the Edmonton Mercurys, and Terry Jones wraps it all up in a nice little package, and he does some stuff on Twitter as well that you may want to check out. Interesting weekend, Boston and Vancouver in the Stanley Cup Final starting on Wednesday, a long layoff. St. John playing tomorrow night against St. Mike's in the Memorial Cup, and you want to check that out. And also, check us out next Saturday between noon and 2 right here on Nation Radio. I want to thank our guest, Brian Sutherby. Talked about injuries and the draft. Interesting conversation. Also, Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun discussing that slow-moving Thrasher sale. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk about fait accompli next Saturday. Craig Button, always interesting. Had a conversation about the draft and about possibly the Oilers trading up. Listen for that. And Mario Duhamel, what an outstanding interview, talking about Sean Couturier and his role in the draft. And finally, Mike Spadel, Speeds from the All-Augosphere. We talked about the entry draft and how he's going to break it down in the next little while on his blog, Hockey Symposium. Hope you enjoyed listening. We always enjoy doing it. This is Nation Radio on Team 1260. Thanks for joining us.